Good morning, everyone. And once again, we welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of mortals and immortals. Thank you all so much for joining us today. We are recording in the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we welcome you all. And we will start today with our prayer.
From page 120 of Watchers, Prayers, and Arguments, and page 183 of Miscellaneous Writing by Mary Baker Eddy. Inasmuch as I am God's child, spiritual and not material, I must be perfect. I am whole. I am free. I have all I need every hour. I am without fear, without anxiety. I live in spirit, not in matter, error. I am not in danger. No one can harm me or deprive me of any good. I know no such thing as pain, suffering, or disease. For I am a reflection of life, truth, and love. I am never disappointed or grieved. The harmony of my being is never broken because I live in infinity. No condition of the body or the presence of anyone's personality is essential to my happiness. For God good only is the spring of all my joys. My life is hid with Christ in God. Therefore, I am immortal, for nothing can be lost or die in God. Man is freeborn. He is neither the slave of sense nor a silly ambler to the so-called pleasures and pains of self-conscious matter. Man is God's image and likeness. Whatever is possible to God is possible to man as God's reflection. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. That is the basis of our immortality. And remember, there's not two of us. There's not the mortal and the immortal. There's only the one. Immortal. All right, Karen.
Thank you, Mrs. Roberts.
Yes, thank you.
Watch number 319. Watch that you remember that fear is the fruit of the vine, of which pride is the blossom. A little boy who runs away from home does so because he feels able to care for himself and because he is determined not to submit any longer to the control of his parents. This pride, however, soon turns to fear when night comes and he is hungry and cold. Mortals accept the belief in separation from God as long as they feel adequate to care for themselves. But that pride soon bears the fruit of fear when some circumstance arises that seems beyond their power to cope with. Pride attends the birth of mortals, while fear surrounds their death. Pride says, I can, in contrast to the fear which says, I can't. God says that neither of these is a statement of truth. The correct attitude is to know that all things are possible to the one who reflects mind. The Bible says that pride goeth before a fall. The skyrocket rises in the magnificence of resplendent beauty, only to fall an empty, burned-out shell. The penalty mortals pay for this supposed satisfaction of pride is the torment of fear. The belief of separation from God, which comes through pride, soon turns to fear. Fear, therefore, is the schoolmaster, which, when correctly analyzed, teaches mortals the error of the belief of separation from God, and becomes a wholesome impetus for destroying this belief through the realization that in reality, man has never been separated from God. So there is nothing of which man should be proud and nothing for him to fear.
Beautiful. Thank you. All right. Comments on that? Good one.
Well, the last part where it says there's nothing of which man should be proud. I looked up the word proud in the Webster's 28 dictionary. And it said, he conceives that anything excellent or valuable in which he has a share or to which he stands related contributes to his own importance. And this conception exalts his opinion of himself. And I know that in the past, regarding my children and things, I've said, I'm proud of you and I'm proud of what I've done and, you know, things like that. And I realized that's not a good thing. And so when people will, you know, sometimes will say, well, aren't you proud of her accomplishment? Aren't you proud of being? I said, no, it's not pride. I feel it's, I'm happy for them. I'm joyful. But I have nothing to do with their accomplishment. So I have nothing. It's not, it doesn't reflect on me. But anyway, that was very, looking that up is very, but I've learned not to say that.
Great definition, and thank you. Yes, it's a great definition. We should all be familiar with that. And I know we've all had those experiences. You get puffed up and think you're doing something great. And yes, then the fall comes, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So.
I love Jesus.
Go ahead, son, please.
No, I just love Jesus' example. What an example for all of us. Even him, he lived in constant praise or glory to God. He, what an example of a reflection of God. Everything he did, he attributed the power to do it or the, you know, the ability to do it to God. In John 5, I think, gives so many examples where Jesus walked this life in as a meek, but of course, the power from God giving us examples of it in everything he did. It's just beautiful to me that he said, my Father worketh hitherto and I work. And then he said, the Son can do nothing of himself. And then he said, for as the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will. Everything relating it to the Father. And I think it's just humbling and very beautiful.
Thank you. And that is why he could do all these things. It's the only reason why, because he knew it wasn't him, it was God. Mm-hmm. You think it's you, you can't do it. You can't.
And he knew that God was his parent. He didn't have human parents. I mean, he loved his mother, of course, and his human father. But he knew who our parents are.
Yeah, that's very essential. And these are all essential points in knowing your immortality. Never born into matter, never die out of it. And that's what this watching point addresses. It is also, we've gone over some of these points before, but I know there are many new people listening, but the Herbert Ricci Association address on immortality, he makes it so clear, and not to be acknowledging that you were born into matter. And that's why we have to be careful. It's so easy. And I know I've done it myself, you know, new baby, it's so exciting. They're so cute. And, but if you were acknowledging or thinking that they're being born into matter, you're damning that child. You know, no, you must never do that. And he goes into that so beautifully, Herbert Reiki. And what does Mrs. Eddy say about it? It's, you know, unfoldment, and there's many things about that.
Rather, born of God, born of spirit. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you have not created something that you're proud of. And the flip coin of pride is, yes, fear. It's also shame. Because people are so, oh, you know, they did something great. And it's, oh, no, you know, I made such a mistake. I'm just, this is awful. It's all, as Mr. Evans would say, where is God in any of that? God is the missing element in any of that. No God. And you will flip back and forth between pride, shame, and fear until you stop it.
Self-condemnation is also not so, it's not good, period, because that's what the meanest, the meanest kind of pride or something she calls it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the immortality brought to light article or another one?
It's a 1949 association address by Herbert Reiki called Immortality.
Yeah, I think his wife also did one.
His wife does one too. Immortality brought to light by Dorothy Reiki. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Jeremy?
I just was grateful for the Daily Watch, because where it talks about fear and all that being a wholesome impetus to get us back to realizing we're not separate from God, I feel that's just a really wonderful way to look at it.
Thank you. Yeah, if you're feeling fear, you can ask yourself, well, where have I not seen God as the author and creator of all things? What am I missing? Anne in England sent some beautiful things this week. One about Herbert Reiki that I'd like to read to you. She says, first, another small bit from the story of Christian Science wartime activities, 1939 to 1946, concerning Chaplain Reiki. Perhaps the most notable Christian Science demonstration of Chaplain Reiki overseas work and the activity for which he received outstanding recognition was a venereal disease control program. When he joined one group and learned of the appalling disease rate among them, he determined that it should be corrected. In close cooperation with 60 other men and the commanding officer, practical steps were taken to bar questionable entertainment from the base. Then arrangements were made for Chaplain Reiki to carry out his proposal of establishing a school wherein the men could be given courses of instruction in many subjects, and he was sent to Rome to buy the textbooks. There were at one time 380 men enrolled in the school in 18 different courses, ranging from music appreciation to agriculture, and an attractive bulletin was printed to advertise the school. In 2 months, the disease rate had been reduced to zero, but the chaplain realized that the good record must be maintained, and he continued his impersonal Christian Science work concerning the situation, taking other helpful steps to strengthen home ties, because as the chaplain commented, in strengthening the home ties, I knew that we were going to help solve the problem. Now, here he took practical steps, as well as, you know, he was praying and using his metaphysics to heal this situation. And it went from something a lot to zero. And in giving them constructive things to do, then they weren't getting themselves into trouble. They had other things, enduring good and true things to think about and to do. And so it was the practical as well as the metaphysical. And you can tell by his writings what a fine metaphysician he was. And in his article or association address, he writes, "Don't be immortal in a state of mortality. Be an immortal living in this glorious state of immortality. enjoying everything immortal, beautiful, good, and true. Live in that eternal mind that knows no beginning and no end, no birth and no death. Live in that perfect life that exists through all time. It is eternity itself. In no other way can you demonstrate the infinite capacities of healing in Christian Science. Reading the Bible intelligently, with a true imagination, and with a sincere desire for all of the spiritual interpretation, inspiration, and lessons to be learned therefrom, will extend your atmosphere of thought. You will learn to see yourself not as a mortal living a few decades in the 20th century, 21st, but as an immortal living in an eternal universe with every idea that is beautiful, good, and true. Such a correct spiritual, eternal, immortal sense of things will eliminate from your thought any fear of death. Yea, every belief in death and the accompanying experience of sickness and sin. Truly, be a priest after the order of Melchizedek, without father or mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God. It's so beautiful. And then he goes on asking people, Mr. So-and-so, do you remember in 1903 when Mrs. Eddy addressed us from the balcony? He asked these questions about people and sometimes going way back into the past because he claims it's animal magnetism that we don't remember, you know, before we were born, born so-called. And it's a beautiful thought. It's one I've never thought of very much, but I know how important it is to understand that point, even though it might seem somewhat obscure. But we must recognize our immortality, never beginning, never ending.
And what did Jesus say before Abraham was?
I am.
Yeah, he knew his immortality. There's no question in his mind.
Yes, he sure did. Absolutely. And we must. And if, you know, get there, and maybe you'd be surprised what you might remember. I think I've told this story, and this is a true story, and Parthens had told me it, about these young parents, a newborn, and then this little girl, I don't know, two or three or something, and she wanted to go in to see the little newborn brother by herself. And the parents thought, that's a little weird. So I think they turned on the, what's it called?
Baby monitor.
Baby monitor, yeah. And so they let her go in by herself. And she was talking to her little brother and saying, can you please tell me about God? It's been a while and I can't remember everything. Mm-hmm. So, and don't you feel like these little babies and children, they just drop out of the bosom of God? I mean, they're so innocent and pure. Mm-hmm. So why not? And I have experience with young children, probably you all have, that you do feel that they've been somewhere very holy and special, and they do remember it. And why not? So, and that's why it's so important to keep their purity as much as possible and to maintain it. And doesn't Mrs. Eddy say that in Prose Works about keeping your childlike qualities in you, not childlike, but childlike.
And I'm sorry. I remember when I first walked, they said I couldn't, but I told them where I was and what I did. They said, you're right.
Oh, that you mean you couldn't remember it, but you did.
I did remember.
Yeah. And that's true. I remember a lot of things, and then I'll look at pictures of myself, and I'll say, gee, I was just a little baby then. So it is possible. But mainly, memory, we know, belongs to God, and we remember what we need to, and anything we need to, we will.
So, can I add something to
sure.
this?
Yes, go ahead, Zeri.
Yeah, before I am, I was yesterday talking to the Christian Scientist who had a baby, And the woman said, oh, he won't remember everything, anything, she said. And I said, I remember learning how to read and write between 2 and 2.5. And she said, that's impossible. I said, nothing is impossible in God. And you say you want to be a practitioner. So we have the mind of God. And this mind of God has no beginning or end.
Thank you. Very true.
Right answer.
Yeah, right answer. Thank you. And we can cultivate all of this if we work at it. I mean, if you think it's impossible, then it's impossible in belief to you. But if you know it's possible, but mainly to know, you can know whatever you need to know, whatever is necessary. And maybe that's one of the reasons Chosen is so popular, because it brings to mind all these wonderful healings of the Christ. Brings to mind, makes them so real, and you do feel like you are there, and why not? And that's what Herbert Ricci brings out, and not these huge celebrations about your birthday when people would wish him happy birthday. He wasn't too pleased. So Mrs. Evans used to say, you can celebrate the day God put you on this earth to accomplish his will and make it maybe a special day, but and all these dates and, you know, certain big birthdays, and that means this and that. That's, we do not no, mm-mm. Do not, nope. So along with that, Anne also sent this article. She said it's not online, so we'll put it online because it's from 1916, Louise Knight Wheatley, The Eternal Now. And it does talk about the healing of the man by the pool of Bethesda that's in the lesson, and how he'd been sick all this time, right? But 38 years. But when the Christ came, what happened?
He told him to get up and walk.
Yeah,
and the man was surprising. There he is arguing with the Christ. I have nobody. To put me in the water.
Yeah.
He awakened him.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. He awakened him. And that's what the article brings out, that all of this, it doesn't really have to take a long time. It's an awakening process. You awaken. You awaken. And how long does it take to awake?
No time.
I had an experience recently, just a few weeks ago, where I had a toothache. I don't know whether I've ever had a toothache in my whole life. And so I was going to handle it metaphysically, but as the days went on, I noticed I was favoring one side of my mouth, and that I was having to be careful of cotton cold and things like that. And one morning I woke up and I was in such pain. I thought, holy moly, what have I done? And I thought, well, as soon as I can, I'm calling the dentist. I've had enough of this. And but it was like 5 a.m. So I prayed, and I worked with the scientific statement of being, which I always do. And I worked with, because it happened in the night when I was asleep, that Christian Scientists be a law unto yourself that mental malpractice cannot harm you either when asleep or when awake. And then I thought about, because I always go into the allness of God, and the end, which is also in the lesson this week, the first commandment, thou shalt have no other powers before me. Thou shalt have no other gods, no other power, no other law, no other substance. And I thought about the false god of pain, which we all seem to have at times. And do we get down and worship that? And is that the one thing we can't overcome? And I thought, no. This is a false god, just like anything else. And it was very interesting, because that Wednesday, Florence gave the testimony about the person who had a toothache, and her work, there is no pain. And so I thought, well, that's a real message for me. But I mean, I know it in theory, but do I really know it? And I just, and I said, okay, God, I have a really busy morning today, but if you want me to get up and go to the dentist, I will. I'll do whatever you want because I cannot, I can't stand this. So then miraculously, I fell asleep. And when I woke up, guess what?
Pain was gone.
Entirely. I couldn't even touch that tooth. It was gone. And I thought, okay, all right, this is a lesson for me to learn. And a, as Mrs. Eddie Evans would say, a crown, no, a star in your crown of rejoicing, to always remember this. If it could go like that, then it showed it was not real. It was not real. And that is true for everybody listening right now. It's an awakening process. And if you give yourself up to God and you've been living the best you can, then it can go. And that's how the miraculous healings happened, this awakening process. So in this article, it says, because it's referring to the man at the pool of Bethesda, but it says, but what about similar so-called chronic cases of today? Are we not sometimes like those of old whom Jesus rebuked because they maintained there are yet 4 months and then cometh the harvest? Christian Science reiterates, quote, now is the time for so-called material pains and material pleasures to pass away, for both are unreal because impossible in science, end quote, science and health. Yet when a belief of many years standing presents itself at the door of our consciousness to be healed, calling itself a man who has it, do we not sometimes become so mesmerized by this belief of time that we have even been known to take his case by the week or possibly by the month or what we consider to be generously reduced price? This is talking actually about Fishner. Truly, the ways are many and devious whereby the adversary will seek to nullify a Christian Science treatment. So that is true. Anything can be healed in one treatment because it is an awakening process. And so this is a very important article to bring this out. But it also, as we've talked about too, there are people who hang on to their resentments, their fears, and they do, in belief, seem to present a barrier to this happening right away. And then you must have patience and love to continue. And no matter what happens, it's still you're going to wake from it sooner or later. So why not sooner? And then it ends up, the important thing then is to wake up. When this is done, the dream castle will disappear of its own accord because there's nothing else left for it to do. Then let us cease our hopeless contemplations of our prison walls. Have we not already stared at them long enough? Let us know that it never existed in God's beautiful realm of the real, and that we were consequently never in it. Let us realize that inharmony of any kind is no part of man, that it cannot attach itself to man, nor call itself either the dream or the dreamer. Let us remember instead that if we are living in God's eternal now, wherein no laggard element of time can ever enter, where no stone walls crumble, but where all is perfect and harmonious and complete, as in that primal hour when mind spake, and it was so. So, no false gods of pain, God of pain, no false gods. Stay, that's why I say all the time, stay in the Father's house. You stay in the Father's house. You don't come out of curiosity, you don't start listening to all this disturbing news or even elated news. If it's just listen to the Father, he'll tell you what you need to know. And this is a present possibility. And as we know in Christian Science, time is not, right?
No time, yeah.
No time. No time at all. My brother used to say that to me. There is no time, Mary Beth. I can hear him telling me that. Anyway, so we go on for eternity, and it is always an awakening process, awakening from these false beliefs. and they will occur, and why not sooner than later? So, and that is your immortality. You're tuning into what has always been true about you. Not dying, not being born, not a miserable Adam Dream mortal trudging through life with all these horrible experiences, hoping for the best. Oh. Golden text, Jeremy.
First thing, how long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him.
Thank you. Very important. Very, this is all we're talking about. And, you know, Nancy found in Unity of Good a few weeks ago this quote, which I have kept with me since, that from Mrs. Eddy, Unity of Good, mortals are free agents to choose whom they would serve. If God, let them serve him, and he will become unto them all in all. All in all. In the morning we get up, we are to say to ourselves, God is life. God is life. God is my life. God is the only pure and perfect life. Then Florence said, God is mind. God is my mind. God is the only pure and perfect mind. And Mrs. Eddy would add to that, and all my moments are his. And then I go down to any kind of thing you need to hear. God is vision. God is health. God is joy. God is strength. You name it. He is your all in all, you see. And then you know that through the day. You don't just discard it. You say it in the morning and then forget it. You know it. If your vision looks blurry, no. God is my vision. If you're not feeling so well, no, God is my help. If you're feeling confused, no, God is my mind. If you're thinking some organ can kill you, no, God is my life. This is your arsenal.
This is why when we accept any of these things that come, then we are denying God in that instance, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Denying God in that instance, and we are worshiping a false God, and we come out of the Father's house. And when we come out of the Father's house in belief, you get shot up with bullets.
Yeah.
You're subject to all those beliefs. And who wants to be? And they are beliefs. They're not true. You've just bought into them. And it doesn't matter how long it's gone on. That has nothing to do with anything. I mean, 38 years, that was a long time.
Well, pretty soon it became a law to him. You know, I can. Somebody steps in front of me. You know, he was living according to that.
Thank you. Yes. He was living according to that, going round and around, sort of chasing his tail. Now, in some beautiful articles Carrie sent about this golden text, and this first one is from an 1889 Christian Science journal, The Present Foe. With the prophet of old, I ask this question, how long halt ye between two opinions? It is as vital importance now as it was when it was first spoken. How long are we going to stand doubting whether it is necessary to handle the claims of mortal mind? How much longer shall we wait? And how much more evidence do we want before we believe that, unless handled in science, as our leader teaches us, that jealous, malice, hatred, revenge will make sick and eventually murder a man, that is, to mortal sense? How long do we have to think about this? Let's think about it now. Is this true or not? Did Jesus really heal, or did he heal? Or other people could be healed, but I can't, because I'm, as Florence says, I'm something special. You're something special. You can't be healed. I don't think so. And it goes on, students take a course of lessons in Christian Science and go out declaring audibly that God is all and there is none beside him. And when they have never, by their own good deeds and by resistance of temptation, gain any consciousness that what they say is true, they repeat the words like parrots because they've heard others say them. And then they are soon brought to a halt. So God is all. And I love, and it is a no and yes that Mrs. Eddy says, and I know Florence loves this too. God's law is in three words. What?
I am.
And this perfect law is ever present to rebuke any claim of another law. And then also, when we use this a lot in our watching, God's law reaches and destroys evil by virtue of the allness of God. That's how it works. It's not by wiping out error. It's the allness of God that knocks out the belief of error, evil. And that's on page 30 of No and Yes. So, but we say God is all, and then we go on our way and do whatever we feel like doing and think whatever we feel like thinking. But no, you've got to rein yourself in and be in accordance with the Sermon on the Mount, the Ten Commandments. You have to live this and not like a scared bunny rabbit that you're afraid of. Oh, it's thinking out there, they're going to get you. Mrs. Eddy says that too in Prose Works about, you know, that people are looking at danger. Look for danger everywhere, right? You see danger everywhere. Everywhere there's danger. Well, when you're thinking like that,
you'll find it.
Yeah. And you're not in the Father's house either. This takes constant diligence on our part. And that is such a wonderful thing. So ask yourself in the morning, you have the day ahead of you. So who are you going to choose today? Who are you going to serve? You're going to be listening to the devil? Well, good luck with that. Or if it's God, let them serve him in all your ways. And he will become to you your all in all. And you will be able to see this unreality of evil. And then another one article that Carrie sent, a solemn alternative. How long, etc. We may suppose that the prophet was not only impressed with the tardiness of that generation in declaring once for all the service of Jehovah, but with the memory of the weary provocation of the past. When will Israel be true and steadfast in her allegiance to her God and King? It is in every respect reasonable, unmanly, and infinitely perilous to allow the question of your love for God to remain unsettled. So are you going to start the day just worried that maybe this is true, maybe it's not true? I'm not sure. It works for everyone else. Doesn't work with me. You stop it. Stop it. Line yourself up with this truth. Be in the eternal present. Expect healing. Your expectation is from God. Told you that was one of my biggest lessons here. Mrs. Evans said I wasn't expecting healing, and it was because I didn't have healing before. I just, things would go on and on. Maybe eventually they'd fade away. I don't know, but it wasn't Christian Science healing. I had to know my expectation was from God, from nowhere else, and you can expect it, and it can happen right away if you line yourself up to him. Doesn't have to go on forever. And if it seems to in belief, then you keep carrying on and do the best you can, and you will see it through. Because I've had many, many healings like that, and it works. It's not true in the first place. When I look back on it, it was just a bad dream. I really see that. And the time element was nothing because we live for eternity. So however so-called years or whatever it took, it's a flash in the pan. Don't worry about it. So, go, right, Florence?
Yes.
Yeah. And so I will have Chardell read what she gave us.
This is from Romans, from our lesson. If God be for us, who can be against us? And then I found this God with us on our website by Edward A. Kimball. I'll just read some of the lines. Try to be conscious that God is with you every moment. There is and has been always and always will be only the eternal now. Remember only the good. Then you will be communing with God, and harmony will be the inevitable result. Take courage from every experience, and power will be yours. Christian Science brings to light immortality. When error appears, it appears to disappear. Mentally cling to God, good, to the true idea about the false claim, and this will save you from error. The law of God is the only law that exists. Be happy at all times and in all places, for remember it is your right and a duty you owe yourself and to your God to retain that right. Be faithful to Spirit in all you say and do, and success will be yours.
Thank you. It's a beautiful, I know many people have turned to that, God with Us by Edward Kimball. When, you know, you feel like air is just screaming in your ear, you scream back even louder, shut it out, and give yourself to God. And it will work out. It has to. Whatever way, God is with us, always. Emmanuel, God with us. And remember that now we are approaching what can be known either as the Bloody Holidays or what we call the Holy Days. Let them be holy days. Calm your thought. Make sure you're not doing anything that out of personal sense, neither animosity nor mere personal
attachment.
Thank you. I was going to say attraction. Attachment can impel the motives and acts of the members of the Mother Church. Make sure what you're doing is because it's God directed. And out of love, not out of fear, not out of afraid that you're afraid to do this or afraid to do that. So often you can be motivated by fear and not from love. It has to be love.
And not a sense of duty.
No duty.
Other than your duty to your leader, to God, to your leader, and to mankind. But that has to be done out of love.
And duty never points in two directions, as Eddie says.
Thank you very much for that. That's so true, because you think, oh, you know, should I, shouldn't I? No, there's one place you're supposed to be, and you should be there. And if love directs your way, you'll be in the right place. And there's no set rules for that. And you can't ask your practitioner what to do. only God knows what you need to do. As we said last week, in our independent church, we do not tell you what to eat, how to vote, how to feel on social issues, you know, gay rights or abortions, other things. That is between you and the Father. We talk about things, read, you study, then you do your highest sense of right. But don't think, because people ask me, does church have an opinion? Well, churches don't have an opinion. How can a church have an opinion?
We have a building.
We have a building. But we have as many diverse, even in Plainfield. We're all different, okay? Everybody has some ideas on these things. So you figure it out. We don't work like you've all got to think this way. That would be awful. That would just be
boring, too, because everyone would be the same.
Yeah.
We want individuality.
Well, God didn't make us that way.
Right. And I do happen to believe, though, if you are in the right mind, you'll often come to the same conclusions. Yes. That will happen. But still, that's up to you, and that's not anybody else's business. Florence, what were you going to say?
God directs. That's all I was going to say.
Yes, mm-hmm. Indeed. And if we're doing the best we can, he will lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct thy paths. So, very important that we do this.
Yeah, and if you feel a certain way about anything, don't be a Pharisee about it. The way that they were just were always holier than thou.
Yes, and preaching to everybody else. Better to just be an example and zip your lip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, put your finger to your mouth. Remember your blessings.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let your example be the sermon to somebody.
Yes, indeed. And it will. And as we all work in this way, impersonally, it will establish the kingdom of heaven on earth. It will. And right government will become evident in all right things, the materia medica, all of those things. They will, it's a leaven of truth at work. And it's working. Believe me, it is working around the world, all nations, everywhere. So, and then in responsive reading, it mentions the covenant we make to God. And we've talked about this before too, but we have it online. It's called the covenant. And I'll just read the beginning of it, the introduction. A couple of definitions for the word covenant in the 1828 Webster Dictionary are a mutual consent of agreement of two or more persons, the promise of God to man, that man's perfect obedience should entitle him to happiness. In the Bible, you will find the word covenant referred to often. It was a common and natural thing in those days to make a covenant with God. And then the following is an excerpt from the book Memoirs of Mary Baker Eddy by Adam Dickey, who at one time worked in Mrs. Eddy's home. Mr. Dickey referred to his father, Nathaniel Dickey, who in the year 1859 made this beautiful covenant with God. And then Adam Dickey writes of his father, "I never knew a better man than my father. His life was one of uprightness and purity, and he admired and respected all who knew him. After he passed on, his children found his diary, and under the date of August 7th, 1859, the following entry, which gives a better insight into my father's character than I ever could." And I won't read it all, but it talks about turning to God, making sure he prayed three times a day, following the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount, not holding grudges. And we've learned here that all of us need to make a covenant, and it entitles us to great happiness. So, and you will find it true. And in that, you say you will not deviate. You will not deviate from these things. You will obey God no matter what, no matter how rough the time becomes. You will not deviate. And in doing so, you prove yourself to be a tramp for God. And I was telling Craig today, we all love his grandmother, even though we haven't met him. The stories about her are so beautiful. And a few people this week said they were going to be tramps for God. Right?
Promised that they will be happy.
Indeed. So mm-hmm. We're going to end on something now.
This is an article from the 1927 October, the Morning Press. Santa Barbara, California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was in a journal.
It was in a journal.
And it speaks about the nations and about just what we were talking about.
And do we know who the author is?
No, we don't.
Okay. All right. So it says, modern modes of thought tend more and more to deny or to belittle the moral responsibility of man. We hear too little these days about sin and its consequences, and very much too little about the rewards of righteousness and holiness. men have more emphasized the importance of creed and dogma, of belief and profession, and have almost forgotten the righteousness that exalteth a nation and the holiness that makes the individual strong and beautiful in character and full of happiness, success, and peace. And yet these correct standards of living and doing are the principal theme of all the prophets, the Gospels, and the Epistles. In the effort of the so-called modernists to destroy the things in religion that have been emphasized much above their value and that the race has outgrown, let them have a care lest in their militant attitude they do not also destroy those things without which religion, even life itself, is worthless, empty, meaningless. Moses did not make a law, the law, when he declared unto the children of Israel the Ten Commandments. He only revealed it. When he said to the Israelites, "Ye shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left, ye shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God hath commanded you, that ye may live, and that it may be well with you, and that ye may prolong your days in the land which ye shall possess," he was not giving to them a law that is not equally true for every nation and for each individual composing it. The path of righteousness and peace, justice and love is the path that leads to real success and happiness, as certainly here and now as it did for the Jews in the wilderness. When Moses threatened the Israelites with dire punishment should they forsake the path of righteousness and peace, justice, making empty threats, but was revealing the eternal law that the Creator has written in the lives of all men and has made a part of their very beings. History, no less than Revelation, speaks with no uncertain voice, telling of man's responsibility for his life and conduct, and of the terrible consequences of his yielding to unrighteousness. The nation that walks uprightly, that has been strong to resist the temptation to immorality, intemperance, indolence, injustice, and crime, is the strong, the great nation. A nation to be truly great must have high and great ideals and must be striving with some success to realize them. Young men and old have always been proving their own responsibility for their lives and conduct and are still doing so.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.